I have to apologize to those who went to the U-Series, because this is the same lesson y'all heard at the U-Series, and to Dennis, because he heard it at Memphis when he went with me a couple of months ago or something like that. You know it by heart now? It's great. Thanks. But the rest of y'all haven't heard this, so I just wanted to share it with you as well. It's estimated that if you could measure in gallons all the water just on the surface of the world, not counting the ice and glaciers, underground reservoirs that you can't see, it would come to about 360 trillion gallons of creeks, rivers, seas, and oceans. So the bodies of water that you can see with your eyes, those awesome pictures from space and vast amounts of blue that you can see on the planet, that's 362 trillion gallons of water. Give you some perspective on that, there are about 44 million gallons of water that flow over Niagara Falls every single day. That's 44 million gallons a day that flow over Niagara Falls every single day. At that rate, if it flowed continuously, it would take 23,000 years for it to reach 362 trillion gallons of water. We have a hard time wrapping our minds around that number, a trillion. If you were to spend $1 million a day from the time of Jesus until now, you would not be able to spend $1 trillion. Let me say that again. If you spent $1 million a day from the time of Jesus until now, you would not be able to spend $1 trillion. To spend $1 trillion by spending $1 million a day would take you 2,800 years. A trillion is a lot. Liquid on the face of the planet comes to 362 trillion gallons, not the stuff that you can't see. And yet Isaiah chapter 40 and verse 12 says that God measured the waters of the earth in the palm of his hand. All the water on the entirety of this planet is like a drop in God's hand. 362 trillion gallons. Everybody likes to get all dramatic about the weather these days. Massive floods, torrential downpours, 10 inches of rain, last week and a half. Thunderstorms, rain-wrapped tornadoes, hurricanes, ice caps melting, glaciers disappearing. Yet all of that power, all of the water on the entirety of the planet is just a drop in God's hand. Go to the next slide, Steve, if you don't mind. Scientists say the observable universe, in other words, what we think we know about the universe, what we think we can calculate, the observable universe is 93 billion light years wide. A light year is the distance that light can travel in 1 year, which is 5.8 trillion miles, give or take a few miles, which would be a terrible road trip with your family. Brother's touching me. Don't you make me pull this car over. 5.8 trillion miles is one light year. And they estimate that the entirety of this universe is 93 billion light years wide. And yet God has marked off the entirety of the heavens in the span of his hand. A span is the distance between your outstretched thumb and the tip of your index finger. That's how small the universe is compared to God. By the way, the light that you see from the sun is 8 minutes into the past. It took 8 minutes for the light from the sun to get here. If something happened to our sun, we would not know about what happened to it over the next 8 minutes. The closest star that we have to the earth is Proxima Centauri. It's 4.24 light years away from us. So the light that you see from Proxima Centauri is 4 years into the past. And yet God measures the entirety of the vastness of the universe in between his thumb and index finger. Go ahead to the next slide. If you were to watch all the YouTube, TikTok, and Netflix content, some of you have probably tried that, about 18,000 years worth of content as of 2023 on three platforms, which is probably one of the main things you're going to remember about this lesson, if I were to guess. Three platforms, 18,000 years of content if you were to watch it continuously. Now, if you were to be going the Saturn V rocket speed that took man to the moon while watching all of the content on these three platforms, it would still take you another 1 million years to reach the edge of our galaxy alone. Yet to God, the span of the entire universe, all the galaxies together, is thumb to index finger. Go ahead to the next. Weight of Mount Everest is estimated at more than 350 trillion pounds of rock. That's not counting the weight of the snow and the ice on top. 350 trillion pounds of rock. Just one mountain, not the mountain range, one mountain. Not mountain stacked on top of it, one mountain. And Isaiah 40 and verse 12 says that God weighs it like you were putting a pebble on a scale. You take all of the storms, not just one storm, but all the storms across the timeline of history, hurricanes, tornadoes, dust storms, sandstorms, superstorms, storms on other planets, the eye of Jupiter, solar storms and flares from every time period all across the entirety of creation, all the power of all those storms and the power of those combined storms, name 1 and verse 3 says, are the dust of God's feet. It makes my head hurt, overpowers my senses and scrambles my brain to think of how vast and immense God is, and to look at all the stuff of creation and know that these things are just small things compared to God, and to listen to the explanations of His truths, and to see how creation declares His glory, and how His invisible qualities, His eternal power and divine nature are shown and heard in everything that is around us and what He has created. And Romans chapter 1 and verse 20 says that we are without excuse. No wonder we're without excuse because of all the things that He has given us. The evidence of God is all around you, playing like Dolby Digital surround sound at the movies all the time. And Isaiah 40 and verse 26 says, lift your eyes to the stars of the heavens and ask who created these. God brings them out one by one, calls them by name, because by His power, His great power and mighty strength, not one of them is missing. Every creeping thing, every bird singing its song, every frog in a mud hole, every coyote pack that howls at night, every bobcat that screeches like a little girl and freaks you out, every single raindrop, every blade, every tree, every blade of grass, every tree, everything. Everything is screaming, God created me. God made me. God is seen through me. It's a chorus that never stops. It comes out in the morning, and it comes out every night, and they're all singing praises to their Creator. Every single day, all these things do is praise their Creator. And there is nothing the world can ever do to stop it. It's a song that doesn't end. And if this is the unchangeable truth that is ever present around me, then how could I ever miss it? After all these explanations, how could I ever miss it? That He is everywhere, and He is so much greater than anything that is here. Go ahead to the next one. My senses are bombarded with the sights of God, the sounds of God in creation, the tangible and the touchable and overwhelming truth that all of these things that are all around me are the works of His fingers, and the moon and the stars He set in place, Psalm 8, verse 1 through 4. That I'm fearfully and wonderfully made, that the clouds are the dust of His feet, name 1 and verse 3. The entire expanse of the universe would fit in between His thumb and index finger, and that all the waters of the entirety of the world could fit into His hand like a drop of water. How in the world could I ever stop hearing that chorus of creation? How can I ever stop seeing the wonderfully made world that God has given us? How can I ever become distracted by this wonderfully astonishing and brilliant truth? But I am. We are. How many of you have gone through an entire day and never realized that God made it? Might have been today. How many of you have ever enjoyed the sun or the shadows of the moonlit night and never knew that God was the one behind them? There's a reason why we sang the song that we just sang. This is the day the Lord has made. I'll rejoice and be glad in it. Sure, the day it will be filled with gobbling up streams of data and online content like some kind of digital Pac-Man behind your eyeballs. But how many times have we been so lost and caught up in temporary things that God has been blocked from our view because that day has been filled with so much other stuff? Don't worry, Steve. This next part, don't let it scare you. Just click it. Yeah, go ahead. What I've noticed over my life is the more that I allow myself to be surrounded by man-made things, and my attention to be on man-made things, the less I sense God. When my senses are surrounded by man-made things, I don't sense God as much as when I'm kayaking through a creek or surrounded by trees or watching a beautiful sunset or being in the middle of a field or even at a funeral observing the body of someone who has died. The more I allow my senses to be engulfed by man-made things, the less I sense God. And we have become infatuated with an incessant flow of temporary, artificial, digital pleasures, a constant barrage of temporary updates and pics that refresh every second, and we have become comfortable with a steady diet of the comfortably temporary. Once again, on three platforms, there are 18,000 years of content, just on three platforms. The almost never-ending stream of pixels and code can cause our eternal perspective, our God perspective, to get drowned. It's kind of like when you're in the tub and you go underwater and someone is talking to you through the door. You can't really hear, but you know someone's saying something because your ears are underwater. Creation hasn't stopped shouting every single day. The things that you see, they haven't stopped shouting. The heavens haven't stopped declaring, and the storms haven't stopped being the dust of God's feet. And the trillions of gallons of water are still singing about how they're a drop in the palm of God's hand. But my senses are constantly being stimulated towards something else. And the more that my senses are stimulated, I would say distracted and overpowered, by man-made things, the less I'm going to sense God. The more I am bombarded by temporary things, the less I'm going to see the eternal. And you know this to be the case too. Most 12 to 18-year-olds are on their phones for more than 8 hours a day. For most, it's 10 to 12 hours a day. That's half. Senses are being blitzed and blasted by alerts and messages, and someone liked this or sent that. And how many times do you know? Maybe you're not looking at yourself more than you're looking at other people. How many times have you known of people who watch TikTok video after YouTube short, after Snap story, and they're constantly simply looking at their phones, watching 10 seasons of their favorite show, you know, whatever it is on Netflix or Prime or wherever you're watching it. And the last 10 hours goes away because of all the things that you've engulfed when it comes to the pixels. And after you've done that 10 hours, how much more is left in the day? The more I am engulfed in man-made reality, the less I sense the reality of God. I'll give you some examples. Go ahead, next one. If you've ever known any gamers in your life, you know that gamers can stay in front of a TV screen for at least 15 hours at a time. Now, how many times can you stay in front of a TV screen for 15 hours and down more caffeine than your body's ever supposed to handle, trying to get to the next level up, next level up, next level up, and then 12 hours, 15 hours have passed, and you sleep and you rinse and you repeat like some digital shampoo bottle? Next one. How many hours are your ears bombarded with music from Spotify or iHeartRadio or Amazon Music or YouTube or podcasts? You get in the car and the first thing you do is turn up the radio and find your jam. And when you have that in your ears, there's nothing else that you can stick in them. For kids, when they get out of the car, as they're walking in the house, they go from the environment of a blaring radio to sticking in earbuds or AirPods or Beats or Raycons or Bose. And they are going into a house where they're oblivious to where people love them, and they're drowning out everything else but what is in their ears. Go ahead to the next one. Then there's the virtual reality headsets from Meta, Oculus, HTC, the new ones that have just come out by Apple that are going to be on the market very soon, which engulf all of your senses in a digital world of man-made pixels, man-made landscapes, stimulating every one of your fractal, audio, kinetic, optical, tactical, and spatial sense in an online scape of the artificial. It is a man-made landscape of incessant data, never-ending landscapes of advertisement and entertainment, multi-sensory, total immersion in everything, an artificial and enhanced reality which overwhelms the real. A constant, incessant flow of temporary pleasures, pictures, choices, which overpowers the sense of the eternal. I'm not saying that all these digital platforms are sinful. If you want to go into the metaverse and do your Ready Player One thing, then that's not sinful. Here's my rub. I have a hard enough time making the right God-glorifying choices in the reality that is right in front of me, much less adding another reality on top of it. And if I'm walking around in an enhanced reality screen where Google or some AI is defining all the things around me, like some Google thing is connected to my eyeball, how long until that AI becomes how I define everything in my entire life? That Siri or Alexa knows best. Or let's just ask ChatGPT to write our next Bible class or sermon. How long until I start defining the world and seeing the world by the algorithms that were designed by people who do not believe that God created the heavens and the earth? The digital advances that we are making and that we have made are amazing, but they can also become blindfolds to the glory of God. Because the more that I'm engulfed in man-made things, the less I'm going to sense God. Imagine the most impressive thing, the most amazing thing in the world right in front of you. You're at Yellowstone Park and that geyser erupts, spewing super heated water hundreds of feet in the air. Or you're in Hawaii on a tropical secluded beach on some kind of, you know, honeymoon vacation when a volcano explodes in a neighboring island. No one dies. Or you stand on the edge of the Grand Canyon, you look over, and you're on one of those ocean tours where you have a curious humpback whale come up by your boat, or a great white shark. Just something amazing. Something that you can never possibly forget in your entire life. That's right in front of your face. How would you ever miss that? All I have to do is put something between you and that amazing thing, and you don't see it anymore. All I have to do is stimulate your senses away, and the most wonderful and beautiful thing that you have ever seen in the entirety of life can be covered and hidden and lost because your attention is distracted away to somewhere else. Is it any wonder that God's creation sings so loud every day, every night, and so few people hear it anymore? Go ahead to the next one, Steve. There's an interesting passage in 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 4 where Paul says, "The God of this world, Satan, has blinded the eyes of unbelievers to keep them from seeing the light of the gospel and the glory of Christ, who is the image of God." That Satan has blinded the eyes of unbelievers so that they can't see Jesus anymore. Satan can't defeat God, but he is the master of all magicians because the devil can make God disappear by giving you something that blocks your view of him. How can the devil make something as glorious as the light of Jesus Christ disappear? How can the God of this world blind us from seeing the light of Christ shining in the darkness? Satan doesn't have to defeat God. All he has to do is distract you from seeing him. And when he has your senses, he has you. I was at the youth singing in January, back at the first of the year. There were about 300 kids that were singing songs of praise to God. It was great. It was wonderful. Sounds of worship and voices blended together in harmony and song to God. It was a great night of praise. But there were some who were sitting right next to me that heard none of it. They didn't see the words they were singing come to life in their hearts and in their minds. There were songs that would bring you to tears, but it fell silent to those who were sitting in my pew, in the same auditorium with the same sounds of praise echoing off the same walls in the exact same place. Because all down the pew I was sitting in, I was by myself with all my friends. But propped up in the place where you put your Lord's Supper stuff was phone after phone after phone of a football game that was playing that night. They were surrounded and besieged by some of the greatest songs and melodies ever written to God, and they heard none of it. It wasn't that those notes disappeared, and it wasn't that those 300 voices were silenced. It was that something else was distracting and covering the very tones and melodies that were all over my ears in the exact same place. Their eyes glued to a screen, their AirPods dangling from their ears. I don't know who they were. I don't remember their faces. I just remember the distraction. Do you know all that you have to do to stop hearing the most beautiful singing to God in a congregational setting? Put your earbuds in and listen to something else. The devil has no power to turn off the light of Jesus, but he does have the power to cover your eyes and mine with the temptation of looking at something else. The devil can't stop the message of the gospel from getting into your sound space, but he can tempt you to put something else in your ears that keeps the gospel out of it and hooks your senses into the temporary and totally obliterates the eternal. Those guys in my row didn't have to watch the football game during worship service, but they allowed their senses to be driven and dominated by something else other than the worship of God that was right in front of them. Jesus and his truth and his message and his commands and his gospel of repentance and remission of sins, that is the greatest sound that the world has ever heard. It's the greatest truth that we have ever known in the entirety of life or in the entirety of existence of the world. The brightest truth, but our senses can be blinded by other things. And though the blood and body of Jesus could be right in front of you, you are somewhere else. Go ahead, see. We're very sensory-driven people, okay? We are driven by sights and sounds and smells and the sounds of dings and alerts on our phones. When someone else's phone has the same alert as yours and it's in close proximity, what do you do? What do you do? If it's in close proximity and you hear it, what do you do? If it's in your pocket, your phone's in your pocket, you go like this. Is that me? If it's in your purse, you start looking through. Is that me? It becomes a reactionary, almost instinctual behavior for you to reach for your phone. When you hear the same ringing or alerts or doorbells like mine, it's like you're biting into a lemon in your brain. If you think about biting into a lemon in your brain, your saliva glands actually produce more saliva like you are actually biting into a lemon. Because we are very sensory driven with experiences and taste and smells. And did you know that the Bible and the gospel is very sensory driven? That there are things in the Word of God that are sensed and smelled and touched and tasted. It's why we have the emblems of the Lord's Supper table. To stimulate our tactile senses, our taste, our smell, our touch. They are senses that remind us of something. The songs that we just sang together. You hear the voices of other people. You hear the vibration and even feel the vibration of their vocal cords as the harmonies and melodies, they resonate off your eardrums. You sense the worship of God. It's not just something that you know or read about. It's something that is actually experienced. But what if those experiences and senses are already overwhelmed by something else? Go ahead and next one. Jeremiah chapter 18, we have another one of Jeremiah's very strange accounts when he receives the word of the Lord. I don't know if you remember, we went over a lot of these on Wednesday night series. Jeremiah is a very interesting character when it came to how God approached him to bring a message to his people. And Jeremiah isn't told the message of the Lord at the beginning. It's not like God shows up and says, here's the message, go and deliver it. God uses Jeremiah's senses to bring him to a point where he understands what the message is going to be. And in Jeremiah 18, he is commanded to go down to the potter's house, and there I will give you my message. God could have just given Jeremiah the message before he ever went down to the potter's house. But God wanted Jeremiah to go to the potter's house to see and to experience what it is that he was talking about. So Jeremiah goes down to the potter's house where they make pottery and they shape clay. There's that spinning wheel and they're playing with mud. And Jeremiah 18 verse 3, Jeremiah's at the door of the potter's house watching the guy work at the wheel, seeing him. But the pot that the potter was shaping did what it would do if I was the one that was trying to shape the pot. It went all wompy-jawed and wrong, and after it was kind of molded into something else, that's what the potter did. The potter put the clay back on there and molded it into another pot, as seemed best for him. Now, this is what God showed to Jeremiah before God actually told Jeremiah what the message was. God used Jeremiah's sense of sight, sound, touch, movement of clay, and it's very interesting that God used a piece of tech to do that. If you didn't know it back then, having a potter's wheel was a pretty advanced piece of technology. So technology is not bad, but man, does the devil use it to stimulate our senses away from God's reality. There is no mention of any words being stated between Jeremiah and this potter. He's just at the potter's house looking in the door, wherever it was. And after he had seen this picture, and after he had sensed this picture, it is then God comes to him in Jeremiah 18 verse 6 and gives him the message. O Israel, can I not do with you as this potter does? Like clay in the hands of the potter, so are you in my hand, says the Lord. So the potter's wheel was stimulating the senses of Jeremiah, preparing him to understand. The gospel is a very sense-driven message. We hear the gospel. It's one of your senses. You hear the gospel. You see the cross of Christ, the blood, the fruit of the vine, the body of Jesus, and the unleavened bread. We hear the prayers that are being prayed. We see the fellowship of the saints around us. We sense the love of the church and the preaching and the prayers and the feel of the hug that we get when someone wants to encourage us. All of these are sense-driven things, and the gospel is a sense-filled message. But if our senses are filled with something else, we will not be able to understand the message. You can picture Jeremiah standing in the doorway of that potter's house, watching as the craftsmen work, seeing the clay being molded from a blob of nothing. He could see the potter inspect the clay. He could see how there's a defect and there's a flaw, and how the potter starts the process all over again. And Jeremiah could take in the smell of the workshop and the feel of the clay and the water and the sweat and the fire in the kiln that's been prepared for the finished product. The sound of the wheel that's turning and turning and turning and turning. All of those things were tuned to the reality that was right in front of him. The reality that God used to give him the message. If Jeremiah just put in some earbuds and watched a TikTok video at the doorway of the potter's house, then he would have missed the point entirely. Just like if you were to do the same thing at a youth singing, you would miss the point of the worship service entirely. Go ahead to the next one. There's a very interesting passage in John chapter 21 where Peter, who grew up as a fisherman, that was all that he knew, he's so excited to see the risen Jesus on the shore, okay? He jumps from the boat and he swims to shore, and on the shore, Jesus is cooking fish. And while eating that fish, you can label all of the senses that Peter is going through. The smell of the coals, the smell of the cooked meat in the air, the sound of the water in the background, the smell of the sea, the feel of the muddy sand. And I can picture Peter's big mouth. It got him into trouble so many times, just stuffing it in with all this fish, like a kid shoving in macaroni, Connor. He just goes to town, right? Goes to town on this fish. And it had to be good because Jesus made it. But while he's shoving this fish in, all these things are around him. Jesus asks a question. Peter, do you love me more than these? These what? Do you love me more than fish? Do you remember what Peter was before he was a disciple, an apostle? He's a fisherman. Do you remember what Peter said he was going to go back to doing after he found out that Jesus was dead? I'm going to go back to fishing. The message of Jesus directly connected to something that Peter would probably eat and sense and smell 100 times after that and 100 times over, eating grilled fish. And every single time Peter ate grilled fish, he would be reminded of a single question. Peter, do you love me more than these? Go ahead to the next one. I'll close with Malachi chapter 2 and verse 2. If you will not listen, and if you will not take these things to heart and give honor to my name, says the Lord of hosts, I will make your blessings into a curse. In a documentary that we talked about on Wednesday night, not too awful long ago, it's a Netflix documentary called The Social Dilemma. It starts out with a quote from Sophocles. Nothing vast enters into the life of mortals without a curse. We are jumping headfirst into a vast world of virtual reality, artificial stimulation to the highest degree, where every sense of our brain and body and spirit is going to be driven to the farthest reaches humanly possible. In some cases, it will be a great blessing. But as with any blessing, if we allow it to overpower every other sense, it will become what curses us. And I go back to the original question, is it any wonder that so few hear the chorus of creation singing praises to God anymore? Because how many of our senses are being covered and bombarded by something else? What God creates will draw you towards Him. What man creates will draw you towards them. Don't let anything get in the way of you seeing God every day and seeing the light of Christ above any darkness the world has to offer. The God who created this world and everything in it has created a dwelling place for you in eternity. And if you get stuck in this temporary, you will not get to see it. If you have lost focus and become trapped in the incessantly digital temporary, then repent. This is the first time you've thought about it. Then know that God gave you all of this, and that God continues to give you all of this, and that God gave you His Son so that you could be saved. So get the world out of your ear all the time, and out from in front of your eyes all the time. And do not let the world be what you reach for all the time. Because you have to let God stimulate your senses into eternal things. Things that will never pass away and things that will always, always be there. And if you need to start that this afternoon by either repenting of the things that you know that you've done wrong towards Him, towards others, or if you need to come to Christ to put Him on in baptism, Galatians 3, verse 26 and 27, to confess Him as Lord, to be His, get your eyes off of the temporary and see what Jesus has for you in the eternal.